Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021, and we're recording remotely. So last June in 2020, we had a great show with Sean Lawson of Lawson's Finest in Vermont and Catherine Kyle of Blind Tiger in New York City. And we talked about everything from Lawson's starting at one barrel all the way up to Sip of Sunshine. So this is kind of like episode two where there's so much going on with Sean at Lawson's and all these new releases that we really wanted to have a follow-up episode. So let's have each guest introduce themselves. Start with Sean.
I'm Sean Lawson with Lawson's Finest Liquids in Waitsfield, Vermont.
All right, Catherine.
I am Catherine Kyle. I was the longtime general manager of the Blind Tiger, but have since just recently moved on.
All right. So Sip of Sunshine, you know, even, you know, talking about state distributions and where you can get it. You know, the last time we talked, we were talking about how it was just so hard to find and you guys worked out your production and distribution. And just the other day, I was at north of Boston at a simple restaurant and I asked for an IPA and it was Sip of Sunshine in a can. So that just sums up, wow, this is the beer world we live in and what you guys have done. So why don't you just recap where you guys are at? Because in my mind still, you know, Lawson's Finest is that hard to get beer, but now it's my go-to. Like I go to Westside Market in New York City, always have it.
Well, thanks, Jimmy. Appreciate that and appreciate your support of our brand. And it is much more widely available than it used to be. And I'm really excited by that. That was really what spurred the initial move to start contract brewing with Two Roads Brewing in Stratford, Connecticut, now an alternating proprietorship. So we're the licensed brewer there as well in Stratford. And Sip of Sunshine over the past 7 years has gone from one state. We've started bringing it up to Vermont to 9 states all across the Northeast. Mm-hmm. And over the course of that time, we've not only expanded our distribution, but increased our production quite a bit to make it regularly available for our fans. And it makes me smile so much. I'm so happy about the way that we've been able to achieve that because that was part of the motivation was having to say no all the time to the fans who were trying to track down our beer, wanted to buy our beer. And just thrilled that Sip of Sunshine has grown to be for a number of years running now our number one flagship by far for Lawson's Finest. And it's those yellow cans, those yellow Sip of Sunshine cans are really hard to miss. And they've served us well in a pandemic, having a mix of packaging that really favors cans and off-premise sales.
Well, you know, the color of that packaging, it's a beacon of hope.
Yes.
Because when I see it, I know it. There's no like weird graffiti on there that I'd have to read through the lines. But, you know, one thing I was learning about you guys, and I know Catherine's going to have a lot to say, because you guys go way back. There's a special relationship in New York City. I know Blind Tiger was the leader and you know, having so many new craft breweries over the years. I know Lawson's and Blind Tiger have a special relationship. Let's start talking about that, because I just love the connection. There are special retailers and special on-premise accounts that really made a difference in creating this craft beer movement that we now take for granted.
Absolutely. I mean, our relationship with Sean Lawson and Lawson's, I don't even know when the first time we had your beer at the Blind Tiger. Do you know that, Sean?
That's a good question. Well, I started in 2008, and it must not have been long after that, because I met Dave Broderick even before Lawson's Finest was launched, in a legendary story that begins in Greensboro, Vermont, which we won't digress into today. But Dave was immediately asking if he could get some Lawson's Finest bootlegged down to New York City. So we worked out the property channels to get the occasional keg. First, I think it was for the VSK events, the very special keg events that the Blind Tiger held. And it was really the only spot in New York City where our beer appeared for a few years running.
I remember once I was so impressed because I was trying to get a keg for a VSK. And so we'd communicate. You're like, don't worry, I'll get it there. And you did.
Well, that's part of the special relationship, is when you have friends in business and you form or forge new friendships, and you have this shared passion around high quality beer and creating memorable experiences for your customers, your fans, or your guests, whatever you choose to call them, that you'll go to extra lengths to really bring them something special.
Yeah. And it's always, that kind of effort is always so appreciated, not just by, us at the Blind Tiger, but by all the fans. Like, there's people who just, like you said, in the very beginning, you had to say no because you just weren't making enough beer to get to everybody. So when we're able to, provide people something that they can't get normally, they're just so happy and, so appreciative, happy, and they're having a great experience. We're having a great experience, and it just, kind of furthers everything. But I wanted to congratulate you so much on your ability to go from, such a small production to a much larger production while keeping your quality in check. And also, really knowing that that's what's key to your customers, is being able to get and drink your beer. So I think you've just done that in such a great, high quality, professional way.
Well, thank you so much, Catherine. I appreciate your recognition of the quality of our beer and how that is a challenge going from a very small artisanal production to a scaled production and distributing it out across 9 states. And we've remained really passionate about keeping the beer cold, keeping it fresh, and ensuring that the cans that are on the shelf available for customers have been packaged within just a few weeks of when they purchase it. And that has really helped us, I think, sustain the momentum that started 13 years ago. We just celebrated our 13th anniversary. Hard to believe.
Wow. That's so great.
No big party this year, though.
No, yeah, save it for 14.
Will do.
Catherine, for you guys at Blind Tiger, this with Lawson's and the whole Vermont thing, you want to just like recap for us when people started noticing like the IPAs coming out of Vermont? Little history.
Well, so we used to do an event. It was a Vermont beer and cheese event, actually, is what it was. And we had people, we had beers from the Alchemist that, we would get in a van and go around and basically pick up beer from, the different brewers that we had a good enough relationship with, who trusted us to treat their beer well and pour it well so that they could have a good representation. And it was just kind of one of our little events where we had, it was just fun and regional, and we had some contacts, and that was great. And, just a few years into doing that, where it started to become more and more popular, and the cheese part, was always good, but it kind of fell to the side because the quality of beers that were coming were just mind blowing. So gosh, I don't even know what year that would have been, but
it might have been like 12 years ago, right?
Yeah. And even longer. I mean, we've been doing that event for a long, long time, but when the quality, I remember early on with that event, it being a little bit of a struggle, being like, okay, this beer's probably all right. And you make some choices where you're like, you hope that it's going to be good. But that stopped, within like 2 or 3 years of doing that event, because everything was just, everything that was being turned out was so high quality and so interesting.
Yeah. And Sean, for you, just going back, the early days, it was different then. I don't think most breweries had tap rooms. And these top retailers and beer bar accounts were really the key to getting your beer out there.
They were. In each market that we first entered, we, our wholesalers and our brand, we were able to be very selective with the accounts that we worked with, who really understand craft beer and can assure us, and we'd have confidence in them really taking excellent care of the beer, ensuring that it always stayed cold and paying really close attention to the freshness on it, not getting a keg and then saving it for a special event that was going to be months later, but ensuring that they served it right away. And so that that sort of cachet that came along with getting Lawson's helped us both in that regard. And it just, it was part of the mystique of Lawson's Finest in the early days. That's amazingly even still continued, because we do have some limited availability of our Vermont brewed beers that roll out into the nine state marketplace all over the Northeast, New Jersey, PA, New York, and New England throughout the year in limited amounts. And so there's still some of that mystique of you have to be in the right place at the right time to get some of our beers.
You know, I watched a video with you, Sean, and you mentioned that there's a signature Lawson's Finest flavor that carries over even into the session beers.
For the IPAs in particular, yes. And it was a combination of the base malt that I really enjoy using, which is a North American pale malt, and an American strain of ale yeast, which originated from the classic Chico strain, what they call the Sierra Nevada strain. Mm. And so it's like a commercially available strain, but it was a combination of that base malt, the water that we have that's very soft, low in mineral content, brewer's dream to work with, and then the specific variety of yeast that we use. And then that provides this beautiful canvas to work with all the different flavors, aromas, and sensory profiles of this amazing smorgasbord of hop varieties we have out there today to work with.
So let's go into the beers that you're putting into larger distribution now. So which one do you want to start with, Sean?
Yes, please.
I know, me too. I know.
I'm cracking open a Super Session number 5, which is our brand new release that's just come out in the last 2 weeks. And our Super Session series is a single hop IPA that started back in 2015, brewed in a sequential number, but we've confused our fans by picking and choosing different numbers in random order. Number 5 is brewed with Cashmere hops, and it is a beautiful rendition of this beer. The Cashmere, as the name might suggest, it's a softer hop. It has a bit less aggressiveness to the bitterness, and it has these beautiful stone fruit notes, melon and peach that I also get in there, as well as a little bit of coconut. And right in the middle of the palate, I get this sort of juicy, like tingling flavor on the side of my tongue on the, that it doesn't really correspond to any descriptive palate or kind of profile, but it's just this overall sensory experience that I get out of the beer. Fans are really excited about this one. It's just hit the marketplace, and it's available in all nine states in cans, in 4-packs of 16-ounce cans and 12-packs of 12-ounce cans. I'm going to take a sip.
Go for it. And Catherine, tell us, like, you know, Blind Tiger's always been this all-American craft beer bar. Are people, like, actually talking about the hops, like, in this type of series? Would this be a topic of conversation?
100%. In fact, just as Sean was talking about that tingly part that he gets on the side, I was wondering if it might be something similar to lemongrass. Is it lemongrassy at all?
Oh, yeah. I could pick up lemongrass in here. Definitely.
But the great thing about a really good beer bar is that's what people are talking about. They're talking about, oh, this is this is Lawson's single hop series, and this is Cashmere. And, you know, it's the beauty of community, because people want to know about it. They want to talk about it. They want to drink it and experience it. And, you know, it's so much fun to, you know, to be like, oh, wow, you know, I'm not really getting, you know, a whole lot of melon, but that peach is really coming to the fore. Or, you know, because everyone's a little bit different in terms of what they're going to taste. But yeah, at the Blind Tiger and many other places, people are definitely talking about the hops and the hop profile. People are talking about malt profiles a lot more, and yeast profiles are, you know, people are just getting deeper and deeper into the beer, which is wonderful.
Well, that's great.
That is a great point that Catherine makes about that what each person experiences is a little bit different, and it's always right. Whatever your sensory experience is of a beer, you might not get peach or melon or coconut, but you might get lemongrass and stone fruit. And so whatever it is, that's the right experience. And it's really fun to engage in a dialogue with the differences that different people get tasting the same beer, sitting together, sharing that experience.
Yeah, it's one of the things that just makes me really love breweries and good beer bars is because there's always something to talk about. There's always something to learn. And, you know, in general, it's like that, you know, it's just so fun. It's, you know, it's so much fun to be engaged with the people that know stuff. And it's so much fun to be engaged with people who don't know anything that are just starting out, because it kind of it reminds you of, you know, when you started out and you start explaining things in a specific way and, oh, that doesn't work. They don't understand that. So you try to explain it in a whole nother way and they help you out and you help them out. Yeah, it's just really great.
So Cashmere Hop, the name of it sounds really appealing, Sean.
It's one of those hops described as sexy. And it's a newer hop variety. To tell you a little bit more about the series, it's a 4.8% session IPA. I don't think session IPAs are quite as popular as they were a few years ago, but the Super Session series is still going very strong for us, our number two brand. And the idea behind the series was to brew the same base beer, same malt, same profile, same ABV with each beer, but just to change one single ingredient, and that's a single variety of hops. So there's only one type of hops used in each rendition. And so I ran through brewing a number of these different beers up in Warren, Vermont at the original brewery and picked out the favorites for our production and distribution. And this is the very first time that number five is available widely in distribution. Previous to now, I just put it out in small batches up here in Vermont in bottles and in drafts. So now it's out there in cans for fans to enjoy across the Northeast, which is really exciting for me. And then the other hop varieties that we've done so far in production, number two is with Amarillo. Number four is with Centennial. Number five, the current one, is Cashmere. Six is Galaxy. So we're going to bring that one back next year. We've only released it once before. Number eight is coming this summer. We've released that before. That's Mosaic. And number seven is Idaho 7. And then we have one more new beer in store for this year for the final quarter. October, November, and December, we'll be putting out our Super Session number three, brewed with Comet hops for the very first time in production.
Whoa, Comet hops. I've never even heard of that before.
It's another one of those new hip hops, a hipster hop.
Like, what is your process of making, you know, picking the hops for these beers? Do you have a thing called the Wizard's Workshop or anything like that?
That's the original brewery up in Warren. We call it now the Wizard's Workshop. We also have a one-barrel pilot system here in our brewery in Waitsfield. The production brewery in Waitsfield, Vermont, is about a 40-barrel system. It's 40 hectoliters, but we squeeze a bit more out. But we also have a one-barrel pilot system, and that's really where we do a lot of experimentation with pilot batches. And so we've been running through a series of pilots on the Super Session to see what we might add to the lineup for next year and beyond, with a number of different experimental hops that don't even have names yet, and then some of the named hops that we've never tried using before.
So what are some, like, Catherine, what are some hops that people are asking for? Seemed like for a while people wanted those like New Zealand hops.
Yeah, for sure. The Mosaic as well. And right now people are really open to hops. I was actually going to ask Sean what his impression is about the Idaho 7. That's one. I don't know if you'd call it newer or not. It's been around for a little while, but I feel like people are using it more and more. And I feel like that's one hop
that almost everybody has a different experience with. Do you have an impression of that?
Yeah, it's definitely a newer hop. It's been around for a few years, but not very long. And I would describe it as polarizing. Uh-huh. I love the hop profile on it. Mm-hmm. But I think why I would call it polarizing, it's one of those hops that people either really like or they really dislike it. And we did find that with our number 7. Thankfully, there are enough people that like it that it was worth making that beer.
But that's the point of doing a single hop beer is to, yeah, you know, to really dig into it like that and find that out.
It's an educational experience. It's part of the idea behind the series is that it really highlights one single hop and you can pick out the nuances of it and really get the full essence and sensory profile of it. And then what I would describe as the aspects that people might not like about the flavor or sensory or aroma on Idaho 7 is tobacco-like nature. It has some notes of tobacco. And I would say that it also has this dank characteristic, like a very herbal, strong, dank characteristic that's off-putting to some people. It's not quite like catty, like a Chinook hop where it's a little, people describe it as like cat urine or mm-hmm. cat piss. I wouldn't describe Chinook that way, but I would call it dank. It has an earthy component to it. It's like fermented vegetation.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do to like capture the essence of a single hop when you're doing the run of your, you know, beers for distribution? Because it's not the same as just making a one-barrel batch.
Yeah, well, we try a number of different combinations. With the Super Session, it's because there's only one hop in there, we've tried a number of different varieties over the years, and then, sort of calibrate each one with the right hop amounts. And then the magic comes in scaling it up because it's not a linear process to go from 1 barrel to 7 and then up to 100 barrels down at Two Roads Brewing. So that's where a little bit of the alchemy comes in. And some of it is more artistic than scientific. It's about marrying the numbers that are on the recipe and the amounts and the proportions to what you get back in sensory profile. And for me, it's either it's just right or it's not just right. So how do I adjust it? Does it need to be a little bit less bitter? Does it need more body? Does it need a little bit more sweetness? And what I tried to do with this beer was to give people the impression of a American IPA, which is more usually in that 6 to 7%, to have enough body in there. So we layered in some specialty malts, and put a bit of carapils, a little bit of oats, to give it a nice full mouthfeel, a nice full body that would balance out a nice charge of hops that would give you a full bouquet of aroma and flavor in the glass. So it's an iterative process, Jimmy, where we go through a number of trials first and then tweak the recipe as we scale it up.
Catherine, I know you have like 5 questions for Sean. So I want you to keep talking to him because this is a real treat. We have our favorite retailer and one of our favorite brewers on the same show.
Well, my first question is, what's going on with the tap house right now?
Well, it feels like June this week. it was almost 70 degrees here in Vermont today.
Wow.
Even though we're in March and it's been sunny bluebird weather the last 3-4 days. And the snow has melted off outside in the beer garden, and we're eager to get open. But, you know, March and April in Vermont are quite unreliable. It will be snowing again this weekend. So the tap room has been closed for inside service. We're still running a really robust drive-through curbside program, mm-hmm. Both for our packaged beer and for the food coming out of the kitchen. And we've expanded the menu nicely for our to-go foods to include more sandwiches and grab-and-go, nice varieties of some wraps, some grilled, our specialty grilled cheeses. So that's going really well, and we're looking forward to the warmer weather coming soon. We know for sure we're going to open up the beer garden a little bit later this spring when we can depend on the weather. Mm-hmm. So once the weather really warms up dependably, we'll reopen the beer garden for outside service. And then as the numbers improve and the state of Vermont and CDC give us more guidance, that we can be fully open for inside service, that'll be the signal for us to bring folks back in inside the tap room. But man, oh man, do we miss them. We miss seeing people in person and being able to cheers with them. So we know at the very least we'll be doing that outside in the beer garden and not too long.
That's great. I was reading a little bit about your family meals that you're also offering as a to-go option.
That's been fun for the kitchen to work out some recipes for a four-top meal, and they're generous portions. They serve more than four that you can bring home and cook in the oven. And we focused that on the weekends as a ski season special. So that's going to be wrapping up soon. But some really great creations. My favorite was, I think, the shepherd's pie, and the two favorites, chicken pot pie, both pies. The chicken pot pie was phenomenal. And our folks in the kitchen, shout out to Cassie and Jenny in the kitchen for creating those meals, coming up with and expanding the menu with the rest of the team working in the tap room to fit the to-go model.
Yeah, that's so great. It's so hard, you know, in this, you know, this past year to, first of all, figure out, you know, what you can do, and then to, you know, kind of get out from under the stress of it all, to come up with like the creative options that really fit with what's going on in, you know, your particular area with what you're able to do. So I really like the idea of those family meals. And, you know, I just feel like it must feel great to, like, you know, drive up and pick up shepherd's pie for the family and a bunch of beer. You know, that just sounds great to me. So I love that.
And even better for me is I you know, got to do quality assurance and quality control. So we've been having a family meal from Lawson's Finest just about every weekend, one night as well.
That's perfect.
That sounds great. Hey, Catherine, for you guys, I know it's been tough on all the New York City bars and restaurants. Do you want to update us what's going on at Blind Tiger right now?
Sure. So, the winter, of course, was pretty rough to get through, but the staff is just, I cannot tell you how amazing. And the numbers were low, but we kept in contact with a bunch of, you know, hyper local regulars, and that's, you know, everything's just become very hyper local. And we were able to open up at 25% capacity for a little while, and we're just now moving to 50% capacity inside. And so that's, you know, we've got our barriers up. We've got all the social distancing. We take your temperature. We get your contact information for anybody who wants to be inside. But we also still have all of our outdoor seats. And now with the weather, you know, coming around, we weren't quite at 70, but we were in the 60s today. You know, it's starting to feel like spring is coming. And the feeling is just so good, because you do start to see some people coming back. And, you know, it just feels so hopeful. But I really do have to shout out to the staff. There, someone got a pedometer, a step meter, and someone says it's between 13 and 18 miles a shift that they walk.
Wow. So going outside to the outdoor, to the...
Yeah.
To
the draft system. Yeah. And our bar was designed exactly not for this. So there's no short way to get to where we pour the beer. You have to go kind of all the way to the back of the building, and then back and loop around, and then get out the front door, and then get out all the way over to the side of the building. And that's, you know, maybe sometimes just for a beer. So it's, you know, it just, I mean, everybody's just been so incredible. And, you know, we've been able to maintain a really great community of regulars, you know, during all of this. And, you know, it's, like I said, it's starting to feel, you know, hopeful, and the sun shining, and, you know, you can just tell people are happier. There's more pep in people's step, and, you know, a lot more smiles, and a lot fewer people sitting there shivering. So that's really good.
Well, it's that time of year for those bright colored cans from Lawson's Finest.
Absolutely.
Hey, we're gonna take a short break. We're gonna be back in a few minutes and talk about the next beer from Lawson's on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate. an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Hey, hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Become a member and support us at heritageradionetwork.org. So we're back with Sean Lawson of Lawson's Finest in Vermont and Catherine Kyle of Blind Tiger Ale House in New York City. Sean, we're tasting some of the new beers that you're putting out for distribution. You tasted us on the sessions number 5 with the Cashmere hops. What's the next beer that you're going to taste with us?
I'll just say this, Jimmy. It's going to be a big year for Little Sip. So Little Sip IPA is our newest addition to the lineup. It is available now, just as of the 1st of March, throughout our distribution territory, first in cans, but thankfully with places reopening for both inside and outside service, especially as it gets warmer, in draft as well in the coming weeks and months. And it's a beer that is fashioned after Sip of Sunshine, our number one beer. It's the little cousin to Sip of Sunshine, so we called it Little Sip IPA. It's brewed with almost the same recipe as Sip of Sunshine, but it's 6.2% alcohol rather than 8% alcohol, which the Sip of Sunshine comes in at. And it's really, it's aligned well with outdoor lifestyle, but also more of an any occasion, a sip for every occasion type of beer. Because 8% alcohol, let's face it, it's packs some punch to it. So 6% is a bit more approachable. Some call it crushable, and we're really excited about this beer launching out into the marketplace. I knew that we nailed the recipe when I sat down with a sample of Sip of Sunshine and Little Sip IPA. Tasted them side by side, and they were nearly indistinguishable, save for the difference in the body and the perceptible alcohol that you get between a 6% and an 8% beer.
Well, it's a welcome for the spring, because last week when I was at this restaurant and I had the Sip of Sunshine, I downed it, and I hadn't had an 8% IPA at lunch in a long time. And I was like, wow, man, this is a good buzz. But I probably would have had two of the Little Sips if they had them there.
It is definitely more of an occasion beer, as well as a lifestyle beer, and a bit more approachable, and more than one is not a bad thing.
Absolutely. I love it. I used to say back before session IPAs, came in and everything was, 7.8, 8.2. I used to say, I wish someone would make this beer and have it taste exactly the same, but come in right around 6%. And I kept saying it and saying it. I feel like I helped make it come into fruition because it was my dream. And it still is. And Little Sip is delicious. That's the beer. We had that for a tasting. Is that right, Sean?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's...
Yeah, we sent that down. We've been making it since last June here in Vermont. And we wanted to see how the reception in the market went here in Vermont. And then it became clear right away that this was a beer that we wanted to launch out into the wider marketplace. So we planned out getting the production up to speed and being able to produce enough of this beer to get it out into all 9 states. And exactly to your point, Catherine, is that so many people have asked us for a beer like Sip of Sunshine, but maybe just a little bit less alcohol. They can only have one sip, or maybe a sip is an occasion where they're at home or it's after work, where there's a time and a place for that. And there are more times and places, I think, for a little sip. Not that it stops people from having a Sip of Sunshine at the ski slopes, as I saw this weekend, during the day or other times. But it is a bit more accessible, I think.
Yeah.
Well, it's great. I really love it. Yeah, for me, like six something, really full-flavored IPA has really been my go-to for a long time now. So I'm glad you're doing it. It's really the right season for everybody. Just I hate to go back just for COVID one more time. Catherine, when you're talking about putting up dividers, my feeling is that a lot of places are starting to feel like old Victorian pubs where you have those high dividers. And I'm like, you know what? I kind of like that, because I remember for years, whenever I go to a restaurant or my places, people always wanted to sit in the cozy nook or in that, you know, a little bench that has a high back or something.
Sure, sure.
Do you feel like this is a trend that's going to stick around?
You know, it's so hard to say. I think a lot of it just depends on, you know, how the vaccine works and how comfortable people feel, you know, being closer together or not. It's, you know, people are on both sides of this. They say, you know, as soon as people have confidence that enough people have been vaccinated, it's going to be gangbusters. There's just going to be, everybody's going to be out. It's going to be all the crowded rooms all over again. And other people say, no, this is going to be a real shift in the whole culture where people are used to staying, you know, in their own separate spaces, and people are going to be much more aware of, you know, the ability to spread germs back and forth. And, you know, and just like you say, the whole comfort and coziness of having those little nooks and crannies. But I have no idea. I mean, I have no idea what it's going to be like. I mean, it is interesting to see how everyone's, you know, adjusted to it, and, you know, the different feelings that rooms have, that you're used to feeling one way, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, wow, this is different. Oh, I kind of like this.
I was reading about some of the old Victorian pubs in the 19th century in England, and they were like, yeah, like, it was like, it definitely was a class division, but they were like, the people of a certain class got to sit in, like, a booth or a chamber that had more privacy. And then they were like, oh yeah, because we want to be separate from those others that might have disease. And more I'm noticing, I'm like, you know what, when I go out with my wife or something, we love to sit in a booth, and I actually like the added privacy. So I'm feeling like that there might be a thing where there's sections that are just more private, not even for fear of disease, but just that I think it's very intimate, you know?
Sure.
So who knows? Maybe there's new design coming.
And maybe both of them will happen, but just in different spaces.
Yeah. And what about for tap rooms, Sean? Have you guys kind of re-envisioned what your tap rooms might be?
You know, we haven't reached any conclusions yet, but I think that we may move more towards a reservation model or a seated table service model. So prior to COVID, we had a self-serve model. So you go up to the bar, you order your beer, you order food at the bar, you get a little buzzer, and you go, you know, the tables are all just first come, first serve. And what we pivoted to with COVID was a whole new reservation system. We never had reservations before. It worked really well with our beer garden it's more of, I don't know if you want to call it social engineering, but it provided sort of the space and the comfort level that people needed to know that there would only be a certain number of people there, and that there would be the right spacing. And I do think as we move into more of a full reopening, that being able to modulate the capacity of the space that we have available inside is an important factor. And on the weekends, especially during peak seasons of summer and during the ski season in the winter, fall foliage, you know, we would reach capacity on Saturdays regularly. And it can get, I wouldn't say it's uncomfortable, but it's close. You know, you need to be comfortable really being close to other people. And I think having a bit more structure to the way that we manage capacity will be a part of the equation going forward. But like Catherine had said, I'm with you. I just don't know exactly what it's going to look like, what people are comfortable with. But we're working on a couple of different models and scenarios for reopening inside that will, you know, be aligned with depending on what our capacity is and what how far open Vermont is as far as capacity and other restrictions.
Yeah, and let's put that behind us.
People are so eager. They're so eager to get beyond this.
2021, I want a little sip. That's what I want. Hey, yeah. And what's cool is you have that locator, don't you? That's really helpful. You know, there's apps and things, but I really like when a brewery has a way on their own site to locate the beer. How long have you had that on your site?
We've had a find our beer or where to buy our beer on our website for quite a while, but we recently launched a new website this past fall that brought us into the present age. So it's a huge upgrade on our old website, and the beer finder got a really nice upgrade. It's integrated with VIP, which interestingly enough is an industry standard in the beer industry. And VIP stands for Vermont Information Processing. So somehow this little company in Vermont got a foothold in the beer business to gather data. And it's all about depletions and distribution. And it's the standard for distributors across the country. It's where data is aggregated about where beer is sold from distributors. And suppliers use that information to really help them out in making decisions about where to focus effort and where beer is selling, where it's not selling. And so the beer finder that is on our website, it's integrated with VIP to tell customers where beer has been delivered at accounts, whether they're bars, restaurants, or retail stores in the last 30 days. And you can search by individual brand, you could search by all brands, you could search by a radius based on a zip code, and it'll pull up all the individual accounts on a Google Map style interface that will show those accounts. So it's a nifty feature on our new website, because that's one of the number one questions we get is, where can I buy your beer?
Yeah, and it's great because, like, just right now I put in my zip code and I'm, you know, there's three, you know, right here, you know, walking distance. And it not only says, you know, you can find Lawson's beer here. It says at Stella and Fly, you can find Little Sip and Sip of Sunshine IPA. Like, it tells you the specific beers, which I think is fantastic.
It's a huge improvement from where we were before. And it's really exciting that the technology works that way. It's a plugin, so it pulls the data right from VIP to keep it live and in real time.
Yep. Whole Foods says Sip of Sunshine. City Swigger says Little Sip of Sunshine, and Super Session number two.
Well, thank you for that plug there, Catherine. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's there now, because sometimes they might have gotten a delivery, but it's all gone.
Sure.
We're doing really well with keeping the beer on the shelf and keeping it fresh out in the marketplace.
Yeah.
Even with the challenges of the last year.
But it's great too for the, you know, for the accounts, because, or the, you know, the places that are selling it and pouring it, because even if they have run out, like, you know, just looking at it, like, I forgot about Stella and Fly, and I've bought a Sip of Sunshine from them before. And they're just this little place that's, you know, it's just a little further than I normally go, you know, from my neighborhood. And so just even seeing their name and being like, that's right, that's when Cole and I were on a walk and he wanted a beer. And I said, well, let's go in there. I think that's Sip of Sunshine.
Awesome.
Yeah. So
Catherine, I have a question for you. So looking ahead, looking forward into the future, you know, what are you looking forward to, and what do you think is next on your horizon as you look towards the future?
My personal horizon? Well, as I alluded to in the beginning, COVID changed a whole lot of things here in New York City. So I am no longer the general manager at the Blind Tiger. And that's a huge change for me. Like, I've been at the Blind Tiger since 2007 or 8. And I've been the general manager from 2011 to 2020. And now I'm just, you know, I decided to just take a pause and try and, you know, assess what direction I want to go in. And what I've been working on, though, is my memoir.
Awesome.
I have a really interesting family background involving polygamous Mormons and all kinds of stuff. And so I, you know, so I've been focused.
Pre-order time. I'm pre-ordering.
But yeah, no, I've been workshopping it and really working on it. So that's what I've been focused on right now. But I'm just kind of letting some time pass and working on, you know, like that, like my, you know, passion project, because I have the time. And also, I just don't know how the industry is going to look. Like, looking into the future, it's really hard to tell. And I'm not sure, you know, what I would like my role to be in it. And so I'm just more about, you know, being positive forward action, and, you know, working on things that I care about. And I feel like, you know, in a few months, things will be a lot more clear about what kind of opportunities there are, as well as, you know, where my specific energies are focused. But thank you for asking. That's very nice.
Well, then to follow up with that, add in, where do you think beer's going?
Where do I think beer's going?
Yeah,
again,
for you.
It's impossible to know. It's just, I feel like right now all the decisions that are being made about, you know, which beers to buy, which beers to pour, how many lines to have, like all of that is just in so much flux, and people are so starved for social interaction. But, you know, there's a pandemic going on. And so I feel like there's so many like countervailing forces that like, I don't know what's going to happen in beer. I mean, people love beer and beer will always be there, but you know, it's beer heading more towards session stuff. It, you know, beer was already hyper local, you know, before the pandemic, and the pandemic has necessarily made it in some ways much more hyper local because it's just your neighborhood places, but also the big breweries have been able to get into, you know, a lot of the package stores. So that has changed a little bit of the variety that's available. And I just don't know how it's going to go.
Sean, for you, how do you define beer? Because there's a lot of conversation now that there's breweries that are making beer for people who don't like beer, you know, like weird flavors or hard seltzer. But how do you define beer? Because, I love beer.
That's what I was. How do I define beer? I like beer. And I think of beer as those four key ingredients of malt, hops, water, and yeast. And yet you've got this amazing array of different choices now that keeps growing of for each one of those. And how you manipulate your own water profile. But I think of beer as a really relaxing beverage that really, it's helped me get through the pandemic. I don't know about you, but having a beer or two at the end of the day, a lot of days or three, it's really helped to ease the tension and the anxiety and the uncertainty. So there's a lot of comfort there. You know, for us as a brewery, one of the things that's been, I think, a part of our success is staying true to brand. So while we innovate as a brewery in certain ways with our process, our technique, and the way that we bring beer to market, we're not out there innovating in crazy ways with flavors, adjuncts, different, you know, new trends or styles. That's not really what we do as a brewery, and it works really well for other people. And what has worked really well for us is really staying true to brand is a bit more of a classic approach to, I would describe it, to brewing. And there's merit to both, because you see fans lining up pre-pandemic for some really innovative styles, techniques, and, you know, beers that cross sort of like expand either the bounds of beer or really push beyond beer, or what some people might say, oh, that's not beer. I don't really take that track. I just stay focused on what we're making and what our fan, what resonates with our fans, and staying true to our sort of core vision and the types of beers that I make has worked really well for us. I'll just add that it's really funny because Sip of Sunshine is one of those beers that people have referred to as one of the original, like New England IPAs, but it, you know, or hazy IPAs, and it has a little bit of haze, but what people thought of as hazy 7 or 8 years ago is not what people would call hazy today.
No, it's crystal
Today's
clear.
Hazy is opaque. It looks clear. It looks almost bright. Now, a classically trained brewer would not call Sip of Sunshine bright.
That's right.
It's certainly not filtered. It's certainly not crystal clear. It does have some haze to it, but that was considered hazy some years ago. And we've really stuck to that style. Some of our beers are hazier than others, but really most of them are at least, you know, they look pretty clear compared to today's New England or juicy and hazy IPAs.
Isn't it funny how just the context changes everything like that? Because it's true. It's like when the early haze beers came out. They were so hazy, but you could put them next to anything now, and they don't seem hazy. They are, but they don't seem hazy.
They don't seem hazy at all.
I remember I don't know if I told this story the last time, but I was on vacation and a new brewery that was putting out, you know, hazy beers, and they were just starting. They went a year putting out clear beers, and they just started putting out hazy beers. And someone put a picture of it on our Facebook page, and I was in California, and I saw that picture, and I was like, oh, that brewery's going to be mad. That's, you know, that's like the yeast at the bottom of the barrel. Like that's not how they want their beer to look at all. Come to find out, that's exactly how they want their beer to look, and everything was just right. But it was just, you know, it was just such a weird change where, you know, what was always considered very not proper before became what everybody wanted to make in their beer. But yeah, I mean, where you guys stand is just the perfect place where it's like the flavor profiles and the mouthfeel and everything is just so, it's at the same time classic and current. And that's just such a hard balance for any brewery to have. And that's not even really what you're going for. It's just sort of innately what you are. So
thanks, Catherine. Well, Jimmy, if you don't mind, can I say a couple of words about our Maple Triple? Because when you ask about, you know, what do you think of as beer and how do you define beer, the Maple Triple is probably the one beer that we make this time of year that it stretches my idea of beer the farthest, because we make that beer with concentrated maple sap, replacing the base, the water in the beer. So this is sugaring season up in Vermont. With the alternating freeze-thaw cycle during the day and the night, the sap starts flowing in the maple trees. The sugar makers gather it up and boil it down to concentrate it to about 67% sugar. And that's that beautiful sweet stuff we put on our pancakes. I love to put it in my coffee. And I take the sap, I work with a sugar maker who concentrates it down to about 15%. Sugar, there were like 15 Play-Doh for the brewers out there. And that's the starting point for the beer. That would be a finished, that would be a starting gravity for fermenting for a lot of beers. But that's what I use to mash in with. And then I add in all the grains and brew a beer with that. And then I age it in maple liqueur barrels for a year and then blend it up with some of the fresh beer that I brew the following year. And that to me is really, that's kind of the farthest I think I've expanded my own idea of what beer is by replacing water with concentrated maple sap. So that's been a fun project for us over the years, and it's got us a lot of accolades, and I'm thrilled to keep making that beer. And we still only make it 7 barrels at a time because it's such a labor of love.
Didn't that win a World Beer Cup Award? Was it when the CBC was in Philadelphia?
Yeah, we've won at the World Beer Cup 3 times with that beer, 2 silvers and 1 bronze. And we've won at the Great American Beer Fest in the specialty ale category 1 time as well. So that's one of the beers I'm most proud of. And interestingly enough, probably the farthest outside of what you would think of as kind of classic beer or true to brand to us includes unique maple beer. So yeah. I guess that's true to brand for Lawson's Finest here in Vermont.
Actually, a quick New England thing, just digress. So you're talking about reducing sap. I have a friend, he's up in Massachusetts. He has maple trees in his yard, and he reduces it different levels for different things, just in their kitchen at home. But he also tapped a birch tree, and I got to taste it. The sap really tasted just like water from a birch tree. I don't know if you've experimented with different saps.
No, I haven't yet, but that's an interesting idea.
That was it. That was this one special moment, and I was like, oh my God, he's controlling like how sweet the maple syrup is by boiling at different times and stuff. So it's pretty cool. I love that you're doing that with your beers. But that beer, is that an only Vermont beer?
That is a beer that's only available here in Vermont. We sell it out through our tap room and our retail store at the drive-through. Right now, we've got 2 different vintages or years, bottling years available in a specialty gift pack. And we bring it to special events. It's one of those limited release beers because there's only about 100 cases of it that I make a year. It's kind of like a small winery offering.
And more sad, Vermont, a few years ago at one of our beer events, a chef who had been working at a maple farm, he cooked a pig in sap. Have you ever had yes. that before?
I have not had that before. No.
So you just boil it in sap, and it didn't reduce, so it wasn't a sweet sap, but it definitely, it scented the entire pork with maple. It was really wonderful. Catherine, you had a question.
Oh, I was just going to ask Sean if I think Maple Triple won the World Beer Cup that year when we were there with Jen Schwartman from Fluid yeah. State, yeah. and we had you... You brought a whole bunch of beers for us to drink during the ceremony, and where we were sitting just happened to yeah. be so many people winning their categories. And we had so much fun just sitting there being like, it's winner's circle.
Yes. There were lots of hoots and hollers. And I think Jen went up to collect the beer award for another brewery that wasn't attending.
Oh, I think so.
From California.
Faction.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Could be Bagby. Yeah, that was so much fun, I have to say.
Yeah, so much fun. Well, we look forward to getting back to those gatherings when we're able. We'll see if the Brewers Association can pull off the Craft Brewers Conference this fall in September out in Denver. But Jimmy, could I give a shout out to a couple of beers that are coming up for the spring and summer
yes,
season that we're not tasting today, but fans can look forward to that will be available in New York City and beyond throughout the nine states we distribute in. We've got our Scrag Mountain Pilsner. I'm sitting in my office. I'm looking out at Scrag Mountain, which is right here in Waitsfield. It supplies the water to the brewery here. And so our Scrag Mountain Pilsner is a beautiful Czech-inspired, classically styled Pilsner. It comes in 4.5% alcohol. And we'll have that out in both in 12 and 16-ounce cans and in draft this summer. Actually starting in May. And then what's really fun is last year we did a version of this beer that we affectionately called here at Lawson's Finest the Scragarita. And it's brewed with lime and salt. It makes a great beer cocktail mixer if you're going to do a margarita-style beer cocktail. And that inspired the Scragarita moniker. But it's all our salt and lime Scrag Mountain Pilsner. And that'll also be out for a shorter run in May and June because we hand peel fresh Florida limes as they're coming into season in the late spring. To go into that beer when we finish it off in the bright tank. And then, but even before that, starting next month in April, we're bringing a nice, another really nice approachable beer. That's one of the Lawson's Finest originals to the market. And it's our Knockout Blonde. And yes, that is Karen Lawson, my wife, co-owner, and partner in crime on the can in her convertible with the hair waving behind her and the hops flying behind the car. The packaging, we have a lot of fun with the packaging. There's a little whimsy in each of it. So that's coming to the marketplace in April. And if fans out there want to see what's coming for the rest of the year, they can visit our website at lawsonsfinest.com to see the 2020 beer calendar, which we'll round out with a couple of IPAs over the summer, the fall, and the last part of the year with a trifecta ramping up from our Hopsalot American IPA coming for 4th of July, our Kiwi Double IPA, which features New Zealand hops in the fall, and then a very special release of our Triple Sunshine for the Christmas and New Year's holidays. So Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's holidays at the end of the year. So
that sounds like a great holiday beer, Triple Sunshine.
10.5. We turned the volume up to 10.5 on that one, Jimmy. 10.5% alcohol.
Wow. Catherine, you want to wrap it up?
I was just going to say, what a great lineup that is. That just sounds so delicious. It makes me want to go to Vermont every month.
you'll be able to get them there in New York because they're going out to all nine states during those time frames.
Oh, so that's fantastic.
Excited to bring those limited releases out to fans across the Northeast.
That's fantastic. Real quick, what are the 9 states?
So we're in Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, Connecticut, the entire state of New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. And hopefully that adds up to 9.
I didn't count, but I think so. That sounds
all
great.
Of New England, New York, New Jersey, and PA.
For some New York kids will be like, I didn't know there were that many states in New England. So, wow. This has been a ray of hope, guys. Thank you so much again. Last summer, we talked about the background of Lawson's Finest, and I was really happy that Catherine Kyle of Blind Tiger and Sean Lawson of Lawson's Finest got to come back and go a little deeper. You really had some great conversations to say. I want to give a shout out to our team, engineer Armin Spengen and producing intern Caroline Fox. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host. Thanks for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.
Listening.